Moncrief on News Talk.
Simon Harris is now Taoiseach. He's the youngest ever and the 16th person to hold the office. So among his predecessors, who are the most memorable and who are the ones we've completely forgotten about? In a previous life, Fergus Finlay got to see quite a few of them up close. Fergus, good afternoon to you.
How are you, Sean? How are you?
Would it be fair to kind of say, if you were to draw a line of all the Taoiseach, kind of there's pre-Lamass and post-Lamass?
Yes, it would. Now, I have to admit to you that I was talking to your researcher, Mairéis, earlier, and I did admit to her that as old as I am, I never actually met Dev or Lamass.
You're right, yes.
I met Jack Lynch a couple of times, but yeah. I didn't know him. But I've known every Taoiseach since Charlie Haughey. And of course, I think when, you know, the history of the office is written, Sean Lamass will stand head and shoulders over everyone else.
Yeah.
Because if there is a father of modern Ireland, it's him. And he's not just the father of modern Ireland. He's the one who broke away from the very, very hidebound traditions of his predecessors. So he was kind of a revolutionary, the only revolutionary Taoiseach I think we've ever had.
Yeah. And certainly had a vision. But I suppose various Taoiseach, just because of circumstances, don't always get the chance to act on that vision.
Not always. Yeah. And in fact, I think one of the requirements of that job is the ability to react rather than act. Every Taoiseach is elected with a sense of purpose. But the old phrase of Harold Macmillan's, it's events, dear boy, that determined your success or failure. And I think we've been lucky by and large in having Taoiseach who very often, not in every case, but very often have been able to rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think the outgoing Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, I think his reputation will improve with time. I think he'll be remembered for Brexit in his first term. And I think he'll kind of go down in history as the best caretaker Taoiseach we ever had, because he lost an election. There was a long negotiation. He was caretaker Taoiseach throughout that. And that period coincided with the start of the COVID pandemic. And he led the country as if to the manor born. And I think those two things will stand to him as a very considerable legacy.
Yeah, because, well, and it's an interesting thing on that point that I suppose as a doctor, he kind of knew how to act during crisis like COVID. But in other circumstances, as a doctor, he didn't really get the struggles of perhaps a lot of people
in the
country.
No, he didn't. I think the middle-class politician was completely out of his depth when it came to the housing crisis, for example. The medical man was on top of things when it came to COVID. But that happens, doesn't it? And the blot on his escutcheon, I think, and the thing that will damage his reputation and that of his government is the housing crisis. He never got that, and he never got not just the extent of the problem, nor the means to solve it, because I mean, I've met him a half a dozen times in that context. Both he and all of his ministers, the one stock answer they would always give you is money's not the problem. And to which you're kind of saying, well, then you must be the problem. Your procedures, your processes, your decision making has to be the problem if money's not the problem. But he never got that. But I still think that we owe him a very considerable debt in respect of COVID and in respect of Brexit. Both he and Simon Coveney, functioning as a team, managed to generate a level of solidarity with Europe to the point where it became Europe and Ireland against the UK, against Boris Johnson. I didn't think that would be possible to achieve, but they did it. And he'll be remembered for that for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think, when we gain the benefit of hindsight for these things, the better things about Taoiseach come to the foreground?
Sometimes. I mean, if you're trying to write a biography of Bertie Ahern, and some have, his standout achievement was undoubtedly the Good Friday Agreement. But I think certain tribunals will follow him all through his life and his career. And in my head, they greatly diminish his legacy and his reputation. I can't see beyond that. That plus the fact that he presided over the growth of the Celtic Tiger, the recklessness of the Celtic Tiger and the collapse of the Celtic Tiger. And that caused enormous pain and suffering. And then he handed that bat on to the unluckiest Taoiseach we've ever had, Brian Cowan, who wasn't able to cope with what he was given, but was given the job far too late to have any hope of coping.
By the way, that's an interesting point, because Cowan, like, even people who loathed him, everyone admitted how smart he was.
Yeah, yeah. He was very clever, very intelligent. But he had a weakness, in my opinion, and his weakness was that he was incredibly tribal. At the start of the collapse of the economy, he really needed to reach out. He really needed to gather the Dáil around him. He really needed a huge amount of solidarity at home in negotiating with, you know, the Troika and all that. And he wasn't able to do it. He wasn't in the end even able to trust his own ministers. He ended up sending them out to tell whoppers to the Irish people about the role of the Troika. Mm. And that was a fatal flaw for which I think he'll never be forgotten. I have huge sympathy for him because I think if he'd got the job a year earlier, he might have been able to soften a lot of the blows. But he was dumped in it by his predecessor.
Yeah. No, he did use the phrase, to the manor born, which immediately made me think of Charlie Haughey, because he managed the trick of actually owning one, but coming across sometimes as a man of the people at the same time.
He was a genius, Charlie. I was searching my head to try and figure out what Charlie had actually achieved. You know, he was Taoiseach four separate times, and nobody else can say that. He commanded the... I can remember working in Dáil Éireann, and if you brought visitors to the house to watch debates and so on, they'd leave really disappointed if they hadn't met Charlie in a corridor. And when you did meet Charlie in a corridor, I came to the conclusion that Charlie didn't actually walk at all, that he glided. He seemed to roll along on casters. He'd put out a hand, kind of a limp hand, that women in particular would grasp and fall all over. He was the most unlikely sex bomb to ever serve as Taoiseach. Yeah. Short and stout and not very attractive, but he radiated a kind of magnetism. That's one side of him. The other side of him was all of his achievements, insofar as they can be remembered, predated his time as Taoiseach.
He was a good minister.
Well, he's remembered as having introduced the free travel for old age pensioner, from which I benefited today. He's remembered as having introduced the tax breaks for literary artists and other artists, from which I benefited once. So, I have to put my hand up and say thanks very much, Charlie. But when he became Taoiseach, it was about him. It was only ever about him. The self-aggrandisement and the glorification, the pomposity, and the puffed upness of him, and of course certain troubles with tribunals bedeviled his reputation.
Yes, indeed.
Well, yeah. Which we're not allowed to talk about.
And I suppose Fianna Fáil went into decline under him as well.
It started the decline.
Yeah.
It started the decline, and that decline continued under Ahern, continued under Albert Reynolds. I have sympathy for Albert Reynolds. He was short time in office. I went through a period in my life, Sean, where I was single-handedly held responsible by some for the collapse of Albert Reynolds. Now, I have always believed that Albert Reynolds collapsed himself, but that's a story for several books, I'd imagine. but he did. He went into office, unknown to anybody, trying to achieve one thing. Which was the end of IRA violence.
Yeah.
He focused on that, he concentrated on that. Like no other Taoiseach I've ever seen, he was single-minded about that, and he achieved it. And he deserves to be remembered for that. Unfortunately, he probably deserves to be remembered for a few other things as well, which weren't quite as glorious.
Because I did read this, sir. It may have been even in Snakes and Ladders, in your book. He, towards the end of his term, he became very paranoid.
Utterly paranoid. I've always believed that Albert had an inferiority complex. And the phrases that he would utter. There was a Fianna Fáil TD of my acquaintance who said to me once, every time I hear Albert saying, my word is my bond, I instinctively feel for my wallet. he believed in everything derogatory that was said about him. He even wanted to sue RTÉ on one occasion because he believed that an RTÉ political correspondent had accused him of being a dirty fighter. When the recording was watched, she had said he was a doughty fighter. But he still wanted to initiate legal action. And I think he probably took more legal proceedings against journalists than any other Taoiseach ever. So, yes, paranoia was the name of the game. Of course, if you're paranoid, that doesn't mean they're not out to get you.
Well, indeed. Yeah. Was it true he used to spend one day a month in bed?
He did like to relax, yes. He also, there was a really famous summit meeting that took place in Corfu, which I remember for a variety of different reasons. But one of the reasons I remember it is There was a very tense, difficult meeting with John Major in the course of that summit. It was an integral part of moving on from the IRA ceasefire. And it was really exhausting. And we were all really dying to get home. But the plane wasn't allowed to leave because Albert wanted to spend an hour in the hotel pool. And he spent an hour in the hotel pool doing lazy laps on his back up and down the pool while the rest of us stood at the side of the pool saying, can we go now? Can we go now?
Oh, well, a man who enjoyed a good swim. So how would you rate Gareth Fitzgerald? And it's often like he's perhaps unlike the Fine Gael or the reinvention of whatever it's going to be we're going to see today, that's Gareth the Good. He was a social democrat. He wanted to pull Fine Gael to the centre left.
He did, which is fair. I believe, by the way, they will stay. I don't see Simon Harris, despite protestations, as being in the mould of the old Oliver Flanagan's of this world. Yeah. Gareth was a sort of hero of mine in a variety of different ways, and I think he started stuff. I mean, Albert Reynolds and Bertie Ahern are given credit for peace process and so on. Peace process wouldn't have started if Gareth Fitzgerald hadn't gone to battle with Margaret Thatcher and ended up the Anglo-Irish Agreement. A lot of the progressive changes we've had in Ireland, which, you know, a lot of us, some of us aren't, but a lot of us are really proud of, would never have happened if Gareth hadn't opened those debates with his originally ill-starred constitutional crusade. But he started a conversation that changed Ireland. He was a terrible messer, I have to say, and a really lovely man to work for, but a really difficult man. I was once given the job of writing speeches for him as Deputy Government Press Secretary. And I learned very quickly that you had to write everything in triple spacing, type everything in triple spacing, because he'd change every single word. And if you typed it tight, you wouldn't be able to read the changes. He was an awful man to work for in that sense. But you, at the same time, he's one of those people, like my own boss, Dick Spring, that you would be happy to work around the clock for. I'm not sure that I would say that about Albert or that I'd say it about Bertie. But Gareth was certainly, you know, a man that you felt honoured to work for.
Yeah, but was he... He maybe wasn't cute enough for the world of politics, to a degree.
No, he wasn't. And he wasn't lucky either. His career was a classic example of when you're hot, you're hot, and when you're not, you're not. There were two stories. Quite early on in his rise, he turned up at an event with a brown shoe and a black shoe, odd shoes on. And he was twitted by people at this event for having odd shoes on. And he explained that he liked to dress in the dark so as not to disturb his wife, who wasn't well. And everyone thought, oh God, isn't Gareth wonderful? Isn't he great? Later on in his career, he was spotted putting salt in his coffee instead of tea. And everyone said, isn't that typical of Gareth the Messer? So, you know, when you're hot, you're hot, and when you're not, you're not. And he had both of those phases, I think.
Yeah. Do you have any expectations of Simon Harris?
I have to be honest now and tell you, I know Simon Harris. I work in a club for people with an intellectual disability in Bray, and he's our local TD, and he's been really good to us, really supportive of us. I am very, very confident that now that he's Taoiseach, we will get the Sports Capital Grant we've been agitating for. but I do, in a way. I watched him as Minister for Higher Education. I think he opened up stuff that had never been opened before. I think he was imaginative around apprenticeships. He did something that I've wanted to see done and my family have wanted to see done for a long time. He has instituted 10 third-level courses and funded them for people with an intellectual disability, which nobody had done before. People had looked at it and shied away from it, and he's done it. So I don't think he's afraid to do stuff. I think the question in everybody's mind will be, will he get overwhelmed? Will he be done in by... You know, the expectations are so incredibly high.
Yeah, and what can
he
do
to survive
in
local European elections?
Yeah.
And then he has a general election a little further down the line. So I think the first thing he has to do is temper people's expectations of him. And he ain't doing a great job of that.
Yeah. Fergus, thanks a million for coming in to us today. Fergus Finlay there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.